This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
A tiny monkey named Punch sitting alone in a concrete enclosure in Japan, dragging around a stuffed toy for comfort. Picture that. Well, millions of us have watched the videos. Many of us have felt something very heavy in our chest, but Punch isn't the first zoo animal to spark heartbreak, and he won't be the last. Associate lecturer Ruby Eckel from the ANU looks at the long history of animals in captivity who've captured our emotions and forced us to confront some uncomfortable truths. Ruby, welcome to Drive.
Hi, Warren. It's great to be here.
When we look at Punch clinging to that toy, what is it that hits us so hard emotionally, do you reckon?
Good question. I think it'll be different things for different people, but two important things, especially when it's a charismatic animal like a monkey, something that is close in a lot of ways to humans, we see something, we glimpse something almost human. It's easy for us to empathize and to project our own feelings of loneliness, of sadness, of feeling, in Punch's case, the feeling of rejection by his peers that seem to bully him in the enclosure or by his mother. We can imagine those experiences when we look at an animal like that. At the same time, and maybe paradoxically, we appreciate wild animals and the idea of wilderness. So there's something that feels sad and wrong for a lot of people to see a wild animal like Punch reduced in some ways to relying on this stuffed toy as a surrogate mother in a fairly concrete enclosure.
For those who aren't aware, has Punch been bullied?
I mean, it's a tricky question, and it goes again to our tendency to project human experiences on wild animals. But it's certainly in some of the more famous videos we've seen the monkeys in the enclosure with him kind of pushing him away when he tries to join in their games. The latest we've heard, luckily, is that he started to make friends. But there's some pretty tragic looking images of him sort of traipsing back to his stuffed toy when his attempts at socializing were rebuffed.
And even as you're describing that, I'm sure many of us are thinking that sounds really familiar.
Yeah, well, exactly right. It's easy to empathize with that sort of experience, and given especially that this animal is a baby animal, he's an infant, that's a particularly heartfelt image for a lot of people. And as a historian, you know, I was moved by these images and videos as much as anyone. And as a historian, it got me thinking about the longer history of zoo animals across the world, and especially in Australia, who have captured our hearts and imaginations in similar ways, even before the internet made it easier for these sorts of images to go viral. So I'm thinking especially about another monkey. Molly the orangutan was a must-see attraction at Melbourne Zoo at the beginning of the 20th century, from about 1901 to 1923. She was in different conditions. She was held in a relatively small cage, but she similarly drew a lot of attention, a lot of newspaper articles, and a lot of very emotional reactions.
I understand Molly was encouraged to smoke cigarettes, wear clothes, and even drink whiskey. What does that tell us about how zoos and the public, how they understood animals back then?
Yeah, great question. It's uncomfortable reading to see how she was actively encouraged to engage in practices like lighting her own cigarettes, smoking at length, as you say. She at one point lit her little cage on fire by disposing of a cigarette in that way. She was able to pick locks. She wore human gloves and things like that. I think there's a lot of entertainment value in that, even if we might find it uncomfortable today. But people have often been fascinated by the almost eerie similarities that other primates can bear to us as humans. And yet it's interesting that even though so many people described her as almost human, that's a quote you can read quite often in their reports about her, very few people ever ever raised a question about whether she should be held in this cage, which you'd hope you wouldn't advocate for a human.
That's really interesting. So it's almost as though because she's, she's almost human, it's almost like, well, she can be in the cage, almost like us being in jail to some extent.
Yeah, that's right. But then I suppose differently to a human that you might be more comfortable seeing in behind bars, people described Molly as having, I think, a kindly disposition, being a bit cheeky, being intelligent, being someone that they like to spend time with. And it's striking when she passed away in 1923, there was just mourning across Australia, and especially in Melbourne, where she was so popular. People were reminiscing about her excellent qualities, about their memories of visiting Molly when they were younger. She was really popular.
It's interesting how once the animal in question has passed or has gone, that we reminisce fondly about them. Let's talk about something else that you've spoken about. That's the thylacine died in captivity in 1936 in Tasmania. And people, when it was alive, were calling it ferocious and stupid. Yet now we're wishing, it had never been extinct. And we talk about recreating it from whatever DNA. So what's happening there?
Yeah, great question. I think the thylacine is a great example of an animal that was derided while it was alive, and certainly while there was still a relatively healthy population of them to be found in the wild. But and even what's amazing is even in 1936, when the last thylacine died in captivity, passed away, there were still people at that time who were saying, yeah, so what if they go extinct? It's a villainous animal. It can't be trusted. It's stupid, as you said. But by that point, some people had realized that they were becoming endangered. They didn't realize quite how endangered. And you were starting to see a change of attitudes. It's almost like a you don't know what you've got till it's gone situation. And maybe it's difficult to care about an animal when it's mostly framed as a menace, as a sheep killer, and kind of unevolves and backward, interestingly, is how Tasmanian marsupials were seen. There was an interesting debate when this famous thylacine that a lot of people might have seen, that haunting footage of it sort of walking around in its cage, when that thylacine died, It wasn't yet common knowledge that we wouldn't be able to find another one, right? So there was this debate about, okay, well, we better replace this attraction in our zoo at Bone Marrow Zoo in Hobart. And it's interesting because you have, some people, as I say, who don't care about this animal at all and still think it's evil. And some people starting to write in already in the 30s to say, no, it's horrible to keep an animal like this in captivity. It's horrible to trap it in the wild. That could be a very traumatic process in which a lot of thylacines lost their lives in attempts to capture them for captivity and display. And there's these beautiful quotes from Edith Waterworth, who was writing in about having seen a thylacine brought in from the wild, and the frozen despair on its face, she says, would wring the heart of any person not entirely without imagination. So there's this idea here that if you've got an imagination, going back to Punch, you can imagine the despair of an animal. Another writer said this kind of species is furiously in love with freedom, and you can imagine the despair of bringing it out of the wild. So I think these last thylacines, they were complex attitudes, but they helped Tasmanians start to think differently about keeping animals in captivity, especially these kinds of ones that seemed miserable when they were behind bars.
We're chatting with Associate Lecturer Ruby Eckel from the ANU about why lonely zoo animals like Punch the monkey capture our hearts and what that means for how we think about captivity. Let's talk about the elephant that carried children in carts for decades. I've forgotten its name. Was it Simone,
the elephant.
Simone. Yeah. Now, many remember her fondly, but also feel sadness about her loneliness. How do nostalgia and guilt sit side by side in stories like this?
Good question. They're very connected, and I think we can also see that with the thylacine that we were just talking about, this mixture of kind of mourning and missing, seeing animals in the past, and also feeling some guilt for what eventually happened. Of course, elephants as a species are still with us. But what's fascinating about this story, Samoan was one of several elephants over the history of Adelaide Zoo who was at this zoo and was a popular attraction, but kind of a performing attraction in a lot of ways, and is remembered by a lot of people still today in Adelaide for, she was a popular attraction if you'd go on school excursions. Children loved her, and she would have a cart behind her and bring children around the zoo. And in the recollections still about Samoan today, as you say, there's this mixture of nostalgia of people, loving those memories of delighting in interacting with this wild animal, but also realizing what kind of sadness and loneliness she might have experienced so far from her homeland in Thailand, and as being the only elephant at this zoo in quite a small enclosure. There's a real mixture of feelings around that.
Ruby, here's a question for you. If we recognise animals' capacity for distress, like we clearly do with Punch the monkey, what responsibility does that create for us? And should we be intervening when something looks cruel, even if it's natural behaviour within the group?
All good questions, and I don't have easy answers for you. I think you're right in people's sense that once we bring wild animals into, unnatural, let's say, situations, and certainly into zoos, we have a greater responsibility to attend to their welfare. Since we've already put them in an unnatural situation, there's more of a case, I guess, for intervening and assuring the welfare of maybe a more vulnerable individual coming into a group like Punch the Monkey. Certainly, I think looking at these historical examples, we can rightly say that humans have failed in their responsibility to these animals that were kept in cages and were such popular attractions and made a lot of people a lot of money, but it's fair to say did not lead happy and thriving lives. So yes, I think there is that greater responsibility and a bigger question to ask about what it means to love animals and to delight in our interactions with them, but also to be in some ways participating in the conditions of their captivity.
Ruby, great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
That was Associate Lecturer Ruby Eckel from the ANU.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.